From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, the latest on what's happening in Israel and a special sit-down interview with Speaker of the House Mike Johnson. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. For about 2 weeks, Israel Defense Forces have been on the ground in Gaza trying to root out Hamas while defending itself on the north from Hezbollah. And as of Thursday, there was a call for a short-term ceasefire, which would not be in Israel's best interest. On Thursday's edition of Washington Watch Live, Tony Perkins talked with freelance war correspondent Chuck Holton about the latest in Israel. Here's Tony Perkins.
Chuck, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to see you, Tony.
So, Chuck, give us the latest. It sounds like it was a pretty busy day for Israeli Defense Forces.
Well, it certainly has been. They've been making big gains on the ground, and they are actually approaching the hospital, the only operating hospital now in northern Gaza, the one that they have proof that the headquarters of Hamas is underneath. And so that's going to get very, very difficult as they try to root out from those tunnels all of those Hamas fighters. They have found, as you said, hundreds of sites that were launch sites for missiles, and many of those sites were next to schools, next to mosques, playgrounds, buried in the ground of the playground. And we're starting to learn a little bit about how they are able to continue firing these rockets, because many of them were actually the rocket launchers built into buildings or built into the ground so that they didn't have to set up a rocket launcher or anything like that. They just had to uncover it with a tarp and they could set a timer and have those things fired. There has not been a day go by since October 7th when we have not had rockets firing out of Gaza. Today was no exception. We had over 10 rocket launches out of Gaza today. And so far, the Hamas terrorists have fired 9,500 rockets between them and Hezbollah since October 7th. Now, they say that about 12% of those rockets have fallen short. And so that all but guarantees that Hamas has killed dozens, if not hundreds, of its own people with those rocket launches. Now, because many of those are homemade rockets and they malfunction. But some of those rockets are long-range rockets, and they're rockets that are given to them or sold to them by countries like North Korea, Iran, and those are the ones that are most concerning because they can strike much deeper into Israel and can pack a bigger punch. Those are the ones that the IDF has been most focused on shooting down, and over the last couple of days, we've seen the number of long-range rockets drop precipitously, so that's a very good sign. I don't think, though, that we'll be able to claim victory in any sense in Gaza until they go at least a day with no rocket launches whatsoever. And let's hope that that happens soon.
So video from both the IDF and Hamas show the urban fighting in Gaza City, and it resembles in many ways the battles to retake Fallujah in Iraq almost 20 years ago. How intense has the fighting that you've seen been?
I think that you could more likely equate it with the battle for Ramadi, because in the battle for Ramadi, the Marine Corps put the word out beforehand and told people they were going to take the city and that anybody that was left in the city after a certain date would be considered a combatant. That's the only other time that I know of when an army has given the word beforehand what they were going to do in order to give people a chance to leave, because that also gives the benefit to the enemy so that they can further prepare and they can also get their people out, or let's, in this case here in Gaza, get some of the hostages out. Perhaps it's a good chance that many of those hostages are now no longer in the northern part of Gaza. They're either in southern Gaza or have even been taken out of Gaza altogether to someplace like Iran. So we don't know that for sure. We have only seen very little in the way of proof of life of any of those hostages. And as you know, only one of them so far has been rescued by the IDF. And that's a major concern for the IDF right now. And so they're having to go very slowly and methodically through the outskirts of Gaza and into Gaza City, not only because there are just so many angles from which you could be shot in an urban environment, but specifically because they're trying very hard to kill the enemy without killing people who don't need to be killed, and that includes civilians. They actually have special units that are going in on the ground with the IDF to specifically grab and rescue Palestinian civilians, women and children, that they come upon as they're fighting their way through and spirit them out of the combat zone to the south. As you opened up at least one humanitarian corridor, now they're saying a second one will be opened up as of today that will allow people to flee south. Again, that is a two-edged sword. It helps with the information war, but it also gives Hamas on the ground a chance to get its fighters, wounded or not, out of the combat zone and maybe even smuggle some of the hostages out as well.
But this really does show the contrast between Israel and Hamas when they're notifying them in advance that they're coming into the city and anyone there is going to be considered a combatant after a certain time period. And then you contrast that with what they're uncovering there in Gaza City, where schools, hospitals, mosques are being used as cover for military operations. I mean, they don't care anything about the civilians.
Well, that's exactly what the leadership of Hamas has been saying all along. And they have said that we are a nation of martyrs, and so we don't have any problem martyring our people for this cause. Now, normally, when a group or a country wants to make heroes out of its people, they're talking about their fighters. They're talking about their heroes are the warriors that go and stand between the enemy and their women and children. In this case, though, Hamas is making the women and children the martyrs, and that is unprecedented in modern war for sure. And so for them to say that they love death as much as we love life, it's kind of hypocritical in a way, because the leadership of Hamas actually isn't in Gaza. They're right in Qatar, which brings up a whole nother question, because the United States calls Qatar a trusted ally in the region, but Qatar gives hundreds of millions of dollars to Hamas and hosts the Hamas leadership in their country. And oh, by the way, we have a military base there with 8,000 troops in it. It's just kind of hard to wrap your head around when you start to think about it.
And it's interesting, we don't hear much from the international community condemning Hamas for pushing civilians to the forefront of the battle, whether they want to or not. And I mean, it is quite amazing, the duplicity, the hypocrisy that we see. Chuck, we're almost out of time. The White House today announcing that Israel was going to have these 4-hour pauses each day to allow for humanitarian relief. But then Prime Minister Netanyahu's office dismissed that. So what do we know? Is that going to be taking place each day or not?
Well, it's being reported that it's supposed to happen. And I think the real problem with that is that it is it's a big publicity coup for Hamas, because Hamas's objective here is legitimacy. And so by negotiating with these terrorists, they are being given legitimacy, and this is all coming under heavy, heavy pressure from the United States. Now, also, I would say, every time there has been any kind of lull in the fighting since it began after October 7th, Hamas has used that time to fire more rockets into Israel. And so I will be watching very closely to see if that happens, if they actually do these humanitarian pauses, if they have rockets come flying out of Israel, out of Gaza into Israel during those supposedly ceasefires. But again, all this does is it takes the pressure off Hamas. And taking the pressure off Hamas is doing exactly what President Reagan, back when I was a young man, said that we should never do, and that's negotiate with terrorists.
Right, absolutely. Chuck Holton, thanks so much for joining us. We continue to pray for your safety, so please stay safe. We look forward to talking to you again real soon.
You can find out more about Chuck Holton when you visit tonyperkins.com. You can also see all the stories we've written on the war in Israel over at the Washington Stand. All the links are there at tonyperkins.com.
For 40 years, Family Research Council has been in Washington, D.C., championing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview. But it isn't easy. As the culture continues to become increasingly divided, believers must continue defending biblical truth while many on the left wish to silence and marginalize Christians. Will you join us? Your financial support has never been more important. Thanks to your partnership, we can continue to reach more Americans with the important news from Washington, D.C. Equip believers to stand firm in our culture and defend biblical truth in the halls of government. Every donation we receive will go towards preserving and advancing policies for a culture that honors faith, family, and freedom. To give, text the word GIVE to 67742. Again, text GIVE to 67742.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Well, it's been a whirlwind in Washington since Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson was elected Speaker of the House 2 weeks ago today. Congress currently faces many, many crucial issues, including the urgent need to provide military aid to Israel and to pass key appropriations bills. All of this as the November 17th deadline of government funding draws closer. The left, with the help of the legacy media, sometimes one and the same, has been working hard to demonize Speaker Johnson, even attacking him for his covenant marriage, as we've talked about here on the program, and sound parenting practices. But we've seen both his unwavering faith and his dedication to the position that God has placed him in at this critical time, and it's refreshing. Yesterday, I sat down with Speaker Johnson in the Capitol for an in-person interview. Here's what we discussed. I'm here with Speaker Mike Johnson in the ceremonial room for the House Speaker just off the House floor. Speaker Mike Johnson, you know, that has a nice ring to it.
I'm not used to it yet. Welcome to the Capitol. Welcome to the ceremonial office, one of the Speaker's offices. There are many, I've learned, in the last 10 days or so. It's great to have you here.
So 2 weeks as House Speaker, what was it like after that vote? I mean, we watched the speech, but let me ask this, has it settled in yet?
It hasn't really, to be honest. It's been a whirlwind. As soon as I was handed the gavel, they told me when you step down from the rostrum, your life will not be the same so long as you hold the gavel. And it's largely been true. This is an all-points bulletin kind of job. I mean, you know, you have to be on 24 hours a day. There's not a lot of downtime. And I think that's particularly true right now because of the way this transition happened. It was regretful.
But that's not new for you.
Well,
I mean, you've been 24/7 since I've known you.
True. Perhaps I was prepared for that. But to assume a speakership, to begin one midstream of a Congress, is very different than it's normally done.
Plus, not going through the various, usually it's like majority leader, then speaker.
Right.
I mean, you came from being the vice chair of the conference. Now, you did serve as chairman of the RSC, but I mean, this is like going from, zero to mock speed in 30 seconds.
Somebody said it's the JV team to the NFL. Okay, whatever the metaphor is. It was a lot. And there was a lot to be done because we were kind of in a tumultuous period for those weeks. And we had to pull the team together. We had to cast the vision. We had to staff up immediately. The Speaker's office has, I think, over 80 employees with the various divisions and jobs that must be handled. We had to set the policies and procedures in place. And immediately, of course, upon us is the government funding issues, and the appropriations deadline, and all the rest. So it's been a lot. It's been a lot.
Well, let's talk about some of those issues. As you 2 weeks into the position, the top three issues facing you, what would you say they are?
Well, the immediate that's before us and we face next week is November 17, and that's when the government funding runs out and we would go into a shutdown if we don't either complete the appropriations process or do some sort of stopgap funding measure.
And you've been working, I mean, the House is working late into the night to get these appropriations bills done.
Right, right.
But you're not going to get them all done by the 17th.
No, and part of the reason for that is there was no muscle memory. This has actually not been done quite some time in Washington. In fact, they told us it could not be done. But this House Republican majority committed to doing it a different way, to changing how Washington works. And I'm pleased to say that we've done a great job in that regard. We're moving the separate appropriations bills through the process, but we've run out of time because we lost a little bit of the clock and a little bit of the calendar. And so it will require a stopgap measure to allow us additional time to complete that process. But I'm very optimistic about this. We, as late as last night, we were meeting. I'm meeting personally with small groups, subsets of members, and talking through their ideas on that, concerns, and we're reaching consensus. I'll tell you, this is an encouragement that there is a great esprit de corps amongst the members in the House, more than I've ever seen
right.
since I've been here.
I can echo that. That's what I'm saying.
And then they went home, Tony, last weekend and the weekend before, and they received that same level of energy, esprit de corps from the grassroots, from the base at home, from constituents, even in different parties.
And I'm hearing it in the narrative when we're talking about the time, the clock is ticking. We're just, we're less than 2 weeks away from the deadline here. But I'm not hearing anything about a government shutdown. I'm hearing about how we're going to fix this
right.
among all the members.
That's right.
On the Republican side.
And we're not going to fix it the way they have always done to us in the past, as long as I've been here, and that is wait till the very last minute right before Christmas and jam an omnibus spending package upon members of Congress and thus the people that spends, you know, trillions of dollars right. and is 3,000 pages that one read.
That's the playbook every right. time.
We're not doing that playbook anymore.
Good. Yeah. Let's talk Israel. Mm-hmm. That is, I mean, the Middle East is, I mean, it looks like it could spin out of control at any moment.
Yeah. It can. And you saw, not only did I address that as a top priority in my speech before I took the oath of office, I also came out as literally the first act under my speakership was the resolution to declare our commitment to Israel, our great friend and ally. And every day since then, we have been emphasizing that. The first major bill that we passed was the Israel supplemental funding package, the aid that they desperately need, and is exactly the amount that was requested even by the White House.
But the Senate's not moving.
They're not moving it. You know why? Because we added a pay for. What a concept. That's another thing that we're doing differently. You know, we can't just borrow the money from some other country to spend and help our
$33 trillion in debt. At what point do we say enough is enough?
$33.6 trillion. It adds every moment. While we're recording this, we'll go another $20 or $30 million in debt in just over a few minutes. It's not sustainable. So we have obligations as the great superpower, the great leader in the world. But our first obligation is stewardship of the precious resources of the American people. And I'm old school, Tony, but I think we can do these things simultaneously, but it takes fiscal discipline. Every hardworking family in America has to make a budget. They have to live within their means. They don't get to spend beyond that. And their government should operate on the same principles. It's not rocket science, but we've gotten away from it, and that's why we're in this terrible situation, and we're trying to bring common sense back to the equation. And so taking $14.5 billion out of a $67 billion fund that was set there to build up the IRS and hire new IRS agents to go and audit small businesses and families, okay? If you're weighing those priorities, I sent the message to Senator Schumer and the Democrats who run the Senate. I think helping Israel right now is a little bit higher priority than hiring IRS agents. I wasn't trying to make a political statement. That just makes sense to us, and it makes sense to the people.
House Speaker Mike Johnson, I like that ring. I'll never get tired of saying that. So we've worked on this issue in years past, religious freedom, freedom of speech. Are you concerned by what we see happening across America when it comes to the anti-Semitic activity and not only on college campuses, but now right here in our nation's capital?
We're seeing it everywhere. I really thought that the large wave of anti-Semitism was not something that we would see in America. I thought we were kind of beyond that. There's always pockets of that, but wow, I mean, it's been shocking to see how this kind of uprising of anti-Semitism is just infected the whole country. And a lot of it is sort of centered in the college campuses, and they've been indoctrinated by these radical leftist professors and all of that. We know that that's a cultural issue, but to have it here in Congress has been so disconcerting. I mean, we had a member of Congress in the last 24 hours who doubled
right.
down on this,
right.
you know, from, what do they say, from the sea to the ocean. It basically, the message is they want to eradicate the state of Israel.
Right.
And that's an elected member of the people in the United States Congress.
Yeah, speaking out in support of a terrorist group.
Yes, they're not just pro-Palestinian. It's as if they're supporting the atrocious actions of Hamas. I mean, it's devastating. We heard the harrowing stories of families of these kidnapping victims in Israel. We had a candlelight vigil, a bipartisan vigil, by the way, on the steps of the House last night, and I led the group in prayer. And I just I prayed to God that we would have peace in Jerusalem. We'd have peace in Israel. We're admonished in Scripture to to pray that and to insist upon it. And it was a great feeling there to have Republicans and Democrats standing united in this cause. And I think we need to send that message around the world.
Well, along those lines, when I was chairing the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, we were actually looking at the anti-Semitism that was taking place in Western Europe. And I remember hearing from the official from the United Nations who oversees the anti-Semitism effort there. And he said that, you know, this is, we need to be paying attention because it's the canary in the coal mine. And when you look at what's happening here in the United States, it's not going to stop with this anti-Israel, anti-Jewish. I mean, it moves to Christianity next. History tells us that.
Well, sure it does. And our faiths are tied together. I mean, especially in this country, of course, we speak often about our Judeo-Christian foundations. And we have that in common. And so it's a matter of faith to us, but it's also a matter of common sense and principle. I mean, it makes sense for us to support our strongest ally in the Middle East. They're the only democracy in that region. And they're surrounded by neighbors who now, clearly we know, want to eradicate them. And it makes good sense from a public policy standpoint, from an investment standpoint. We have to have Israel be sustained and survive and be strong. And I've committed that to Prime Minister Netanyahu, to my counterpart, who's the Speaker of the Knesset in the last few days. They invited me to come and address the Knesset, and I'm going to plan to do that as soon as possible, because I think we need to continue to just reinforce and double down on this idea that America will always stand with Israel. This is the right side of the conflict.
Is this same spirit what is driving the attacks on when you see the hostility toward Christian faith? I mean, you've been attacked for your faith.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, you have a covenant marriage.
Yes, right.
Which I had something to do with.
It's your fault.
Yeah. But, so, and you're protecting your kids from evil influences. Somehow doing what used to be normal makes you a target, a villain.
It's been remarkable, hasn't it? You know, look, we know what comes with the territory when you rise up in leadership. There are whole industries, as you know, that are dedicated to taking down public officials like me. They can't stand the idea that someone would openly acknowledge their faith, right? That's not in vogue in Washington anymore. Hasn't been for a long time. So what you're seeing right now is Washington and the surrounding press corps interacting with a leader who openly acknowledges what he believes. What a concept. I mean, you know, within previous generations, everyone did.
Right. Right.
As of right now, the polling affirms that over a majority of the American people also identify as Christians, you know, with their faith. This should not be a remarkable thing. What would be remarkable to the framers of our Constitution is that this would be controversial.
Right.
That's how far we've come.
But I think that's a part of the cancel culture, to try to suppress, repress, to make people of faith feel like they're isolated and alone, so they'll go silent. And that's all the more reason we need to speak up.
Well, and that's what's happened over decades. You know, we've lamented this many times. We saw the trend happen, the cultural shifts in America, because they convinced Americans over time that there was this rigid, you know, the separation of church and state. Of course, they take the phrase completely out of context from the letter that Jefferson wrote. We all know that. And what they've convinced a generation or two of Americans of is that that means that faith can have no influence in the public square. Of course, the original meaning of the First Amendment was that the government cannot encroach upon the church, right? They wanted, the founders were so clear, they wanted a vibrant expression of faith in the public square, because they knew that what we were doing here was an experiment in self-governance. And they knew that to maintain a constitutional republic of, by, and for the people, you had to have a basic consensus, a sense of morality and virtue that undergirded the republic, or else it wouldn't continue. I mean, Washington said, of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. And then John Adams comes next and he says, look, our Constitution is made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. We have completely forgotten those notions. And we've got to get back to
it. That'd make a great course to teach.
Oh, yeah. I've done that. Yep.
How can our viewers and our listeners be praying for you and Kelly and the family?
Yeah, thanks. I mean, it's no fun to be lied about and maligned and misquoted. You've faced that in your time and service and career as well. I got a resilient little team, little family, and I'm blessed. Kelly is a woman of strong faith. She knows, she believes God called us to this, and so She's being sustained by the prayers and support and encouragement of lots of friends and people that we don't even know around the country who are praying for us. All of our kids feel that. They're not unaccustomed to this either. And we're going to get through it. Look, I'm undaunted by it. I had my feelings surgically removed back in the 1980s, so they can't hurt my feeling. It's no fun to have your family, you know, attacked in the way they are. But they have a strong sense about why we're here, and we're sticking together. But we appreciate all those prayers and that encouragement and support.
Good. Part of the strength comes from the fact that you could see God's hand at work. And you made reference to this in your opening speech when you were accepted the nomination and you were voted in as speaker. God has been directing your steps, members here. God, nothing happens by chance.
Yeah, I mean, Scripture is very clear about that. And if you are a Bible-believing Christian, you know that God is the one that raises up people in authority and he sets down others. And he is sovereign. And so understanding that is actually a very liberating truth, right?
It is.
I mean, it takes the burden. He says, my burden is light. Because you know if you're doing your best, as flawed as you are, to operate in accordance with God's principles and to do what is right and good for the people, then God blesses that, and it takes the responsibility in some measure off your shoulders. As John Quincy Adams famously said, duty is ours, results are God's, right?
You know that quote too. I do. He said it right there on the House floor.
That's right, exactly.
When they passed the gag rule to keep him from talking about slavery.
No, yep, that's right.
Speaker Mike Johnson, thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Thank you, and for all the influence and the mentorship over the years. I really appreciate it.
And we're going to be praying for you even harder now.
Thank you. We need it.
Well, I want to encourage you to join with us in praying for Mike Johnson and for Congress and all of those in authority. Paul wrote to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 2, he said, therefore I exhort first of all that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and all who are in authority, that we may, here's the key, lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. For this is good and acceptable in the sight of our God and Savior. So if you'd like to join us, this is a great opportunity to see the power of prayer at work. So if you'd like to join us, text the word speaker to 67742. That's the word speaker to 67742 and join us in praying for Speaker Mike Johnson.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.